More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. We've had a lot of wonderful guitarists perform in our studio over the years, but it's especially nice when those guitarists are still quite young and already have a really impressive resume.
Mike Dawes has his own successful solo career, evidenced by the many millions of hits on his YouTube videos and his popular tuition apps that he's created to pay it forward. But he also plays lead guitar in Justin Hayward's touring band, too. That is, Justin Hayward of Moody Blues fame.
Dawes got off that tour long enough to stop by the studio last month. He records here for Milwaukee's Candy Rat Records, and he also visited the UWM Fingerstyle Guitar Program. But here he is with an original tune called Boogie Shred. The wonderful Mike Dawes in Lake Effect's Performance Studio. Mike, welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You are in the middle of what, your fourth world tour? Is that?
I haven't really stopped, so I consider it the same world tour. I mean, I started touring in April 2013, so last year, but this is my fourth USA tour, I think.
Okay.
Just coming towards the end of the fourth USA tour, yeah.
You're not that old. You've been doing this for such a long time, for somebody so young and so virtuosic, so wonderful to listen to you. And for people who are not able to see what I was seeing while you were playing that, you're using the entire guitar. You're using it as a percussion instrument. You're using it as a melodic instrument, as a rhythmic instrument. All of those things are happening. Where did that come from?
Well, I was always listening to, growing up playing electric guitar in a small town in the south of England. You get a lot of rock music, your Red Hot Chili Peppers and your big bands, your Guns N' Roses and things like that. And so I was always into kind of rock music and the drums and the power behind that sort of stuff. But I always had a family connection to fingerstyle guitar through the music of a great French player named Pierre Bensusan. And I guess over time, those kind of approaches to music combined, and again, living in a small town, there's not a lot of other musicians to play with. So I suppose adding the sort of the rocky nature of the guitar into a sort of fingerstyle context is I guess something approximating what I'm doing now.
But you took it into the acoustic instrument too. Mm. It's not the electric guitar.
Yeah, well, I think the acoustic guitar, when I discovered the acoustic guitar, I was about 17 years old. I was playing electric guitar before that. But I found it to be a much more diverse instrument. You know, an electric guitar is a solid-bodied instrument, and you're pretty much limited to what you can do with the strings and effects pedals and things like that. But I really like the idea of, on an acoustic guitar, you can use your hands to... to make all kinds of different percussive sounds. And, I guess over the years I've kind of studied and also sort of developed a way to combine that with using your fingers and your fingernails to play the melodic part of the guitar as well, the strings, to create something that's sort of combines both of those.
When you're working up tunes, do you have an open tuning? What kinds of things do you change depending on the song?
Yeah, well, it's very hard to actually do this sort of style of playing in standard tuning. Standard tuning is standard tuning because it's the best tuning for most things most of the time. Unfortunately, this is not one of those things. So, getting into fingerstyle through the music of Pierre Bensusan and great fingerstyle players like Tony McManus, I just discovered they were using this tuning called Dadgad tuning, which is essentially your standard guitar tuning, but dropping the low E down to a D and dropping the high B and E down to A and D. So you get D, A, D, G, A, D. I found through fiddling around with this tuning and experimenting from the age of about 17 to where I am now, it's a very, very diverse tuning, and it allows for a lot of this sort of, a lot of these extended techniques, where your hands are away from the fingerboard or away from the sound hole.
There's sort of a sustain to it where you've got overtones and you've got that, and it just
Absolutely.
Can kind of ring out in a way where if you're having to fret all the time.
Exactly. I mean, one yeah. classic example is, you know, if you strum the open strings in standard tuning, it sounds horrible. But if you strum the open strings in dadgad, it's a D-sus4 chord, which is a wonderful unresolved sounding chord. And from there, it's very easy to make it major or minor just by simply adding, for all the theory geeks out there, just by adding the major third note or the minor third note. Yeah. And it's a lot easier to, you know, play hands-free.
And that's just such an interesting thing, the idea of playing hands-free, as you say, the extended technique. In fact, it was Tony who actually taught me that. I had not heard that expression before, and we were having a conversation this past summer about guitar playing and where things have moved over the last 20 and 30 years. And he was talking about sort of this extended technique where you're taking it off the strings and moving it into the entire instrument and becoming that one-man band that you yeah. needed to be in the little town in England.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, when there's not a lot of people to jam with and you're totally obsessed by music, it's a fantastic instrument to play because it allows you to do that.
What about writing for you? Did that start at the same time as you were starting to play, or did the technique and the craft of playing come first and then the composition?
I think they sort of accompany themselves. I think you grow as a composer as you grow as a musician. You know, I think a composition skill is an integral part of being a musician, especially a professional musician. I think you can only get so far by playing other people's music. But I've always been writing music. I mean, since I was a little kid and I had a keyboard, I was always messing around on that and coming up with little melodies and things. But learning an acoustic guitar in a different tuning is like pressing a big reset button on everything you know. And I guess that's inspiring. You know, it inspires you to invent and create and discover new sounds that you hadn't really discovered before. And songs just come pouring out after that.
So does it start with, I'm getting into the weeds a little bit here, does it start with a particular sound that strikes your fancy, or is there a particular melodic line that comes to mind first, or does it depend on the tune?
It varies so much. I mean, a lot of it's built in layers. Sometimes I'll stumble across a melody, even on another instrument like a piano, and then I'll figure out a bass line to accompany it. Then what happens is the sort of middle gets filled in. You know, you fill in the middle strings to provide some chords, some harmony and some context to the melody. And then from there, you can add these little rhythmic devices on top, you know, add some little percussive elements and things to really bring the song out. But then sometimes, you know, it's not like that at all. Sometimes you'll just put your fingers on the fretboard and start whacking the guitar and something that will really catch your ear. And you can sort of follow that muse and see where it takes you.
So what happened in this next tune? Which one was it in this next tune we're going to hear?
This next song is called it's called The Impossible, and I was writing it at a sort of very strange time in my own life. You know the old saying, no one writes music when they're happy. So I wanted to create a sort of a very confusing piece of music, not an unlistenable piece of music, but a very sort of rhythmically chaotic piece that was sort of representing where I was at that time. And for that, I used a lot of sort of polyrhythmic devices, lots of rhythms happening at the same time, and lots of unusual noises on the guitar. I actually use a partial capo, which is a much like a regular capo that you'd put on the guitar, but leaving a string open to create a rather unusual sound when you are strumming the open strings. A very eerie quality that...
It's a beautiful sound, though.
Yeah,
I like that
chord. I like it. And things like playing behind the capo, lots of weird mechanical noises. This song is supposed to sound like an evil Willy Wonka, sort of a megalomaniac building all kinds of weird robots and strange machines.
All right. It's Mike Dawes in Lake Effects Performance Studio.
Thank you.
the impossible Mike Dawes in Lake Effect's performance studio. Are you feeling better now?
I'm feeling great.
Good. From when you wrote it.
Emotionally, yes.
Yeah, emotionally.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. No, fantastic. Yes.
Yeah.
I can't write music when I'm happy, but I kind of have to be happy to play music, I think.
To play it. Yeah, so you have your two sides.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. That's why it's taken me so long to write album number two, because touring is just too much fun.
So talk a little bit about album number two. I've heard some of it.
Yeah, well, I have some stuff up online just from gigs and sort of bootlegs and things. But I'm really getting into writing the second record sort of early part of next year. So sort of January, February, March, I'm stopping touring. No more touring, just writing. And I'm going to lock myself away and I won't come out until it's ready. And then, I'm looking forward to getting into the studio and hoping to have it out sometime around fall next year, maybe the winter next year.
And then start touring again so we can all hear it?
I'll be touring while it's being recorded, you know.
Yeah.
The way I actually recorded the first record was I would write a song and perfect one song and then go into the studio and just record that. And then I would ditch that song, you know, I'd forget how to play it and I'd concentrate on another song, go into the studio a couple of months later and record that. So unfortunately, by the end of the album recording process, I'd forgotten the first half of the tracks. So I'll be doing lots of touring next year in between that process to sort of exercise those muscles.
And touring, of course, as we were talking about before, is such an important part of what you do. But it's not just your own music. You're also playing with Justin Hayward. And that is such a very cool thing.
It is very cool, yeah. It's the dream gig, really. And, Justin Hayward, the front man and sort of primary songwriter and the singer of the Moody Blues, emailed me one day asking if I wanted to meet with him and try out some music to play together in support of his solo record titled Spirits of the Western Sky. And, we sort of clicked. We got on like a house on fire, and he asked me to join his little band. And we've just finished our third tour of the U.S., and the really cool thing about it is that Justin has asked me to open the shows. So I get to open. I'm the support act, you know, so I get to play my own music to the wonderful Moody Blues fan base. I get to play a bit of electric, which is great because I get to relive my Guns N' Roses days, you know, get to do the rock stance and everything. But the band's actually a three-piece, and, it's Justin singing and playing guitar, this wonderful musician named Julie Reagans, who does keyboards and backing vocals, and myself, I play the acoustic and the electric. I think the reason it works is because I get to play the percussive guitar style. You know, I get to play the drums on the guitar, and I guess that means we don't need to hire a drummer. I suppose that's the logic, and it's great. So we can go out as a three-piece, and between the percussive guitar style and a very, very skilled keyboard player, we get to sort of provide a big sound for such a small band.
Before he contacted you, were you listening to the Moody Blues at all? I mean, that's way before your time.
Way before. Well, I mean, I was obviously aware of the hits, you know, songs like Question and Nights in White Satin and things like that are timeless, and you can't not know those. But I must admit, when I told my uncle and aunt that I'd got this gig, their reaction really brought home how much of an amazing opportunity it was, and they're very thrilled that I've been able to get them free tickets to Moody Blues shows from now on.
And how has working with him influenced the way you make music?
Well, Justin is essentially a Bible of songwriting. He has written so many fantastic songs, and he's also a monster guitar player as well. And he has the most incredible ear out of from anyone I've ever met. He which sucks when I'm trying to get in tune, because, you know, if I'm 1 cent, 1/100th of a semitone out, he'll call you out on it. He has a wonderful ear and a great ear for melody and for what works and what doesn't. With this genre, percussive guitar, as I guess it's colloquially called now, there are a lot of young musicians starting out. And one of the things that I find the younger generation are sort of learning is they're learning to add melody to their music. It's very easy to get carried away with the tricks, you know. Mm-hmm. And Justin has a very good ear for that, and I think I'm very fortunate that he's asked me to do this gig on the strength of the melodic aspect of my own songwriting, as opposed to the flashy stuff. You know, he's seen all that before. He's not going to be impressed by pyrotechnics. It's about the song, and that's what makes it a real honor for me to join this band, because I know that you know, all the work I've put into songwriting has been, complimented by the best.
Well, and I think as a listener, the pyrotechnics are wonderful, but it really does come down to the essential musicianship right. of it, the essential musical quality of whatever's happening. And that's not just flash.
Right.
You know, there
Absolutely.
Has to be bang, too. There
Absolutely.
Has to be.
I mean, when you do a show as a solo instrumental musician, you know, you've got to entertain the audience. And that sort of thing does help. But it's all about the song. And nothing is there for any reason other than to enhance the song. That's why I really, really enjoy music by people like Pierre and by Tony, because you can be taken away to a completely different dimension just listening to that music. You know, you don't need to see the concert or see any flashy stuff going on just to get that emotion that they're expressing. And that's why I really like that music.
Do you feel that you do that as well, or that you're approaching doing that?
I try to. I have no idea. I guess doing solo instrumental music, you're the least objective person you can be when you're surrounded by it all the time. But that's my number one aim, absolutely.
Well, Mike Dawes, the substance has been on display here. Thank you so much for coming in and playing for us and talking with us. Will you send us out with some music?
Absolutely. I'll play a song called Somewhere Home, which is very inspired by the music of people like Tony McManus.
Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Guitarist Mike Dawes performing his tune Somewhere Home in Lake Effect Studio C1. He also performed Boogie Shred and The Impossible. All the songs are available at WUWM.com.
Dawes records with Milwaukee's Candy Rat Records. His first album, What Just Happened, came out in 2012. He was in Milwaukee last month to perform at the UWM Fingerstyle Guitar Program, and he stopped by the studio then. John Strelecki engineered our segment. And that wraps up our show. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect. It's on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Keep listening. It's 11 o'clock. Fresh Air comes your way next.